Put your right hand in the box.
What's in the box?
Pain. Stop. Put your hand in the box. I hold at your neck a gondra.
Stop fear. Fear is the mind killer. And fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will let it pass over me and through me.
The Duke will die before these eyes, and he'll know that it is I, man, Vladimir Harkonnen, who encompasses his doom.
The Sleeper awakens.
What's the iPad in Dune? What do they call it?
iPad in Dune.
They kind of do. They have like a...
By then they had no... Well, they didn't have... Well, they have like crystal sheets.
Yeah.
They have those crystal sheets that they use to store many, many, many different types of filaments of iPad information. No, it's not a fucking iPad because they specifically don't have machines because of the Butlerian Jihad. Is this how we're going to start? Like legitimately? Because it's important to remember. A beginning is the time for taking the most delicate care that the balances are correct. And that's why beginnings, you see, are most fragile time, which is why we're handling them like one would handle two precious eggs. Right, Holden? Eggs?
Eggs, indeed. They must be handled on a spoon or using...
If it's a race.
Delicate... Yes, if you're racing and there's an Easter bunny
there
nearby,
often is.
Yes, and Christ is, of course...
Not there. He isn't real. I'm glad we started like this. Welcome to LPN's Deep Dives. This time featuring Dune. It's Dunecast.
I think we should begin and end every single episode with this quote in unison. Are you ready?
Sure.
I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass over me and through me. And when it has gone past, I will turn the inner eye to see its path. Where the fear has gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain.
And Dunecast. Hello, I am God Emperor Henry Zebrowski with my, I want to say, human wife. Holden McNeely. I have a wife.
Yes.
I have a wife I make
but
love
to. As you know, she is a sort of a robot person, right?
And I developed
the human
her.
Version. Yeah. You're the Telexlu.
Don't you already murdered the name. But today we begin our descent into Dune. The books of Dune. Six in total is what we will be covering. The original sextology. Is that how you'd call it?
Sextology. And then, of course, his son, using his notes, wrote the final one. And then there's also, of course, a prequel, which actually...
There's many prequels, but
there's a prequel trilogy that kind of concerns a lot of our key players that we're going to be introducing today at the start of this first episode of Dunecast.
Now, to get you started, first of all, because Spotify, our beloved ascended masters at Spotify, have asked us to please begin to try to explain the plot of Dune for people that have not read Dune. So first of all, because remember, I'm the God Emperor. This is my universe. I am bringing Holden McNeely against his will into my universe.
Much like a Duncan Idaho Gola, if you are familiar with the books, and if you're not... I don't know what to tell you, man.
I don't know.
You got a ways to go.
You're at the very
even that fat.
You're at the very bottom of the mountain. So I think because I'm bringing Holden McNeely into my world, I'm forcing him to read all of the Dune books for the first time in order for me to have someone to speak to about it on microphones because I can finally get out of my system. I can finally get all this whole topic away from my family.
Yes.
I can get away from my other friends and I can just put it all squarely on the shoulders of Holden McNeely and the listeners at home.
Now, I will say that I actually started this journey, let's call it, because it is a journey of mind, a mental odyssey. Years ago, and I picked up this book literally to say, I told you this too, back in the day, which is I think what kind of the beginnings of what led to this. I picked up Dune and read it to understand Henry better.
Specifically
why I did it.
Everyone's asking to understand me better, and I can't tell you guys more that all of the clues to my personalities are left to on various locations all over the world and different pieces of content that I've been on. If you just parcel through each single thing that I've said, done, eaten and experienced, you will see the true me, but you have to kind of put it all together
right,
in a way that makes
sense. I had been through extensive stuff for this. I had seen every, you know, all the comedy series he loves.
Mm-hmm.
I got access to his Pornhub history to understand his masturbation.
Top search.
Worm God.
Yep.
Fucks
big
girl.
Yep. That's my favorite. Worm God fucks big girl. It's my favorite way to do it. That's how I always just, because I like to challenge
right.
Pornhub. Give it to me.
Right.
You know, change. See what,
I
see
like
what
the
comes
comedy
from the bottom.
Parody porns. My said the Seinfeld. And
he does.
Ninja Turtles or whatever. But you sort of enjoy this kind of worm fetish.
It's not about the worm fetish. It's about the man inside of the costume. And that's what this entire thing, dude, is about.
Yes.
It's about the man inside of the worm costume. But
yes.
We won't get to God Emperor of Dune until episode 5. So just so you know, it's a little bit more of an intro. We are going to be covering the main book of Dune 1, over these first 4 episodes, basically. We're going to be talking about topics associated with the first book. And just so you know, all 600 pages of Dune 1, it's just the fucking appetizer, dude.
Yes, that's the intro to the whole world. You were just telling me this before we started. I think it's very important. But the reason why we're going to spend so many episodes on it is we do have to build this world. But at the same time, if you just read the first book and you're like, oops.
Or congrats.
Yeah.
Look at me. I read Dune.
Yeah, wow.
You're fucking not even close.
Like a turd on the tip of an ice cream cone.
Technically,
you're useless.
The book one of Dune technically is the best book of the sextology, but it's also just the very beginning.
Yes.
Because the real story of Dune does not begin until book 2.
Yes.
So just to kind of set the scene, Dune 1 begins with a very tenuous transition between two houses deep in space. You got House Atreides and House Harkonnen. They are both fighting over what is supposed to be one of the most valuable pieces of property in the universe, if not the most valuable piece of property in the universe, which is Arrakis, Dune, the sand planet, home of the spice. No water there, though, so there's a lot of fights back and forth. But Dune 1 is the pretty classic action-adventure sci-fi story of the hero's journey. Essentially Neo,
yes.
Paul Atreides, is a good guy versus the classic bad guys, the House Harkonnen, you know, like the Baron, Vladimir Harkonnen, who honestly, if you reread the book, is actually a lot more sympathetic than you think he'd be.
Mm.
And it's about just the story of, oh, you know, a little boy who gets this quote-unquote terrible purpose thrust upon him, who is forced to now fight all these big bad guys, and I'm going to spoil it for you, he wins, but guess what? When you win an entire planet, you don't just get like a bunch of fun shit. It's not like roller coasters and just getting blown all the time. You also win all of the problems with being a god prophet king and being in charge of the most valuable, I want to say transport device. Is what transport device, drug,
cocaine,
food.
Yeah.
It's cocaine
it's
and oil.
Yes.
It can make you live forever. It can make you psychic. It can make you all the shit. And now you're completely in charge of it. And what comes from that?
Yes, exactly. And that's why it was one of those situations for me personally when I read the first book that I'm going to go ahead and say a bit of a slog for this guy for the first several hundred pages.
You're weak.
Then I got into it.
Mm-hmm.
Then at the end, it was one of those weird feelings. There's got to be like a German word for it. I was so excited to finally finish this thing.
Klimt-a-klump.
Yeah, klimt-a-klump. I had serious klimt-a-klump. And I also had this feeling of not just relief that I was finished, but also this almost horrific curiosity, the fact that I knew now that I was set upon a path that I had to fully go through till completion, that the next book would be opened and read, which was something that I actually was not expecting. I really thought I was just going to read the first one.
Mm-mm.
And then I'd heard about the intubated children or whatever happens in the sixth one.
Tlaylaxu.
Either way.
The Tlaylaxu, books 5 and 6, just to kind of, you know, immediately, an insulting sum up of books 5 and 6 immediately is that it's Muppet Babies in Space. But that's we'll get to there.
But also the first book really is the classic hero's journey and is the most structurally like a
normal
sci-fi epic, right?
Yeah.
And it is the A New Hope. I was saying to you earlier, it's like Dune is Star Wars A New Hope, but then instead of like moving on to Empire Strikes Back, like Messiah and everything after it is like 2001 A Space Odyssey,
it
right?
Is, we get done with the how fun and great the Messiah is in book 1.
Yeah.
It is done, which is also why I was so specifically attracted to Dune. But I... wanted to understand, like, the idea of, like, getting into the head of a superhero. If you read The Maker of Dune, it's another collection of fun essays by the author of Dune, Frank Herbert. I don't know if we've even said his name. The best beard in sci-fi next to PKD. It's him, Philip K. Dick. Holy shit, that's a lot of friction. If they were to kiss each other, what a fucking stinky campfire that would be.
How much cocaine would be shared between their nostrils?
Frank Herbert was a famous teetotaler. Oh. I think he might have had a drink or two. He might have had a drink or two, but PKD was not.
PKD?
Oh, yeah.
God.
He liked it.
Rigid.
He liked it.
He liked to get rigid, as he called it.
But he wrote a essay, Frank Herbert, called Dangers of the Superhero, where he basically outlines what he thought of as the idea behind the structure of Dune and the idea where Dune came from. And his concept, the leitmotif of Dune, is the what happens when you put the responsibilities and your fate in the hands of a superhero who just so happens to also be a human being. Because in the world of Dune, there are no smart machines. There are no computers. There are no, this is not hard sci-fi. There is no descriptions of like massive ships or technology or different alien races. This is an entirely human future that completely lies on the choices and the mistakes that humans can make. So they look at this superhero, Paul Atreides, who we'll begin to describe in further and further detail, as you'll see. I love him, but he's a child. He begins the entire series as a undernourished 15-year-old boy that has this sort of, he has godhood put on him from a bunch of people, essentially a system of space eugenics, because that's what the Bene Gesserit are doing.
Yeah, I mean, you say the words Bene Gesserit, that's a whole giant can of worms. Talking about the whole humanization, though, of a godhead, before we even get into the Witch Women's Guild.
A Witch Women's Guild is important, because we might get into the Witch Women's Guild today.
We have to talk about Jessica Paul's mother, who, spoiler alert, is a member of the Bene Gesserit.
She's spicy, too. Just from the descriptions. Do you get horny from books?
That's an excellent question. I think there are definitely moments I have been horny in books. Unfortunately, like, I don't want to say Bukowski's women, but
disgusting.
He talked about
you're
a lot
bad.
Of sort of
you're
sex
a bad
stuff
person.
Or whatever, you know what I mean? And they're pissing on each other and they're laughing about it.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
can be
yeah.
Kind of fun. Oh God, the rabbit novels got me horny too.
That's
actually
weird. That's also a
there
strange
was piss
thing
play
you said
in
that.
Rabbit is Rich, I believe, which was actually, I was like, maybe I should try that.
So you just straight up said that the two scenes that made you arouse from literary history involved piss play.
They're in the shower already. It's clean. Technically to do it.
I'm the God Emperor here. I'm the one who needs to be showered in pee.
And I'm just a pebble of sand in your fucking world.
Yeah,
man.
Bro, and everybody's staring at the God Emperor. Does he have a penis? Does he have a penis? But we'll get to that.
What is Dune?
All right, Dune. Let us begin.
So I like where we were headed. I think what we, it's two houses divided.
Yes.
I think one of my main things, we even had in our notes, Duke Leto is Biden, Harkonnen is Trump, Emperor is Putin.
I think that is just a note we wrote, because I'm not going to fully go into it because then I started thinking about it, because then I was like, Paul Atreides is Hunter Biden? Like, no, he's not. So that is not, that's not really there.
Okay.
It is more
but
about,
maybe
remember
why
this.
We said that is just that Leto seems to be a wiser sage, less indulgent, more.
Well, let's break it down. So the planet Arrakis has been kind of fought over for many generations. When we arrive at the very beginning
it's
of Dune,
it's Iran, essentially. It's, you know,
I would
I mean?
Say, well, because Frank Herbert says the spice is not oil, because in my mind, I always considered there's a lot of ecological and economical themes in Dune. Oh, and I also want to say, again, at the very top of this, we are not English professors. We are not book reviewers. We are not literary theorists. We are just here to have a good time and talk Dune.
I am packing an average 6 inches that I have never gotten complaints with, but I am in no way an expert in sex or books.
He's not. Definitely books. But we are here to just have a fun time talking about Dune. So we're going to try to figure this shit out. Because Frank Herbert, obviously, there is shit inside of Dune that's ecologically minded and economically minded, but that's the stuff that I'm not that fucking interested in.
Right.
But the spice on Dune is this very, very important what you'd use. It's a strategic resource.
Well, and I love that it's more than
to
oil.
To use sieve
it's
turd.
More than, I love that it is has these drug qualities to it.
Yes.
It does make it go. All right, what he's doing essentially in this first book is setting up all these little seeds that will grow into these giant wormy trees by the fourth book. And so a big part of the spice is that A, it's highly addictive.
Yes.
B, we should mention that people's eyes go full blue.
Blue within blue. Your irises become blue and the whites around your eye become completely blue.
So you know when somebody is like fully hooked on the spice.
And also if you are one of the native people who live on Arrakis, one of the Fremen.
The Fremen.
Also,
we haven't
their
even
eyes
said
are...
the word Fremen yet, but
there's
yes.
a lot to unpack here, Holden.
But they are kind of the, yes, we'll get into the Fremen for sure as well. But either way, and it is a drug, but it's more than a drug. I mean, I guess you could almost liken it to peyote or
it's
something
everything.
Like that, where it opens up your consciousness.
Yes.
It can take you to new layers to a dangerous degree, much like someone would go insane if they, say, ate too much of the of that acid, brown
ayahuasca
acid
or something. That's actually a fallacy. That story,
know,
the brown acid actually, which is, it was bad acid. You said, don't take it because you won't get high.
It's not very good. Yes. But then people were like, oh, fuck, man, when they told them not to take it.
And so this resource is only available on Arrakis.
Yes.
And they don't know why it's only available on Arrakis, as you'll see. There's a lot of questions about why only on this planet.
They learn why, right?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. And they also, there's no way to synthetically reproduce it. They seem to not be able to figure it out. It is only on this planet. And now, there's been an ongoing house war between House Atreides and House Harkonnen. Now, House Atreides, symbolized by the Red Hawk, Duke Leto, Mad Hawk of feature, dark, swarthy, strong, able leader, lawful good, if we're going to use D&D categories.
And this might be getting too into the weeds, because honestly, it's not that important, the backstory of like their political reign.
You say this, I say this too, but then all of a sudden in my mind, I start to think and try to spell it out, and you realize there's a whole bunch of shit with the Landsraad and Chome.
Did they have planets? Where are they coming from? Like, in terms of before, because, okay, what you need to know is House Atreides and Harkonnen, who we'll describe in just a second, they've been button heads and kind of.
For a while. The Atreides live on the beautiful planet Caladan, which
is the opposite of Arrakis.
Absolute opposite. It's got, you know, rainforests. It's very temperate. It's gorgeous. They, like, live in these, like, big sort of what they describe, these big, like, lodges. It sounds really nice. Duke Leto is not married. His main concubine is a woman named Jessica, who is a witch. The witch is technically a derogatory term for members of the Bene Gesserit. The Bene Gesserit is a group of women that
say that in the book, they don't say witch, they say the W word.
They say the W word, and it's important because you will get hashtag canceled on Arrakis if you call them a witch. But the Frank
By
Herbert,
canceled, we mean a giant worm will devour you in a cheery crowd.
Take me! God, that would be fucking sweet to die by worm, dude. That'd be so sweet, slide down in his guts.
That's where you and I diverge as people.
I'm going to slide down. I'm going to come out of this fucking little asshole, man. I'm going to be cute as hell, because then you're spiced.
Yeah,
oh, that's the secret. That's the secret.
That's the secret. The worms did it.
And we shouldn't have busted it. But Frank Herbert, love him to death, right? This is a guy, very smart. Don't look too deep into his politics. But he has a man. He's handsome. We look very similar. He is same body, great body. Loved his wife. But the man loves strong women. And that's what I think is nice about Dune. Is that Dune has this ribbon through it of very strong, very capable, very dangerous women.
Yes.
Duke Leto has essentially been assigned by this group. Bene Gesserit, right, which is they essentially control all bloodlines, what they call, they're trying to achieve balance. Because the Bene Gesserit say that their jobs are politics, which means they go and create, using a series of these Bene Gesserit trained women that they marry and position in high places. And what they do is they take their progeny, all of their children, and their goal is to create what they say in their mind, this thing called the Kwisatz Haderach, which is essentially, it's Neo, right? It's a dude Bene Gesserit.
Okay,
which is,
and it has to be a male.
It has to be a male.
The thing. And normally they're popping out girls.
They're only doing girls. But what happened was is that Jessica fell so deeply in love with Duke Leto and knew that the only thing that Duke Leto wanted in this world was a son. And with the first human impulse that starts at the very beginning of Dune, you see that not only is the generations of control that the Bene Gesserit have held over many different houses of the Landsraad, which is the union of all the different planetary houses, they've held this power for so long, and it was done over in a simple act of gushing inside.
Now, my question is this. Can the Bene Gesserit just choose what the gender of the baby
yes,
is?
That's they have total bodily control.
And no one explained to them that it's a construct.
No, they know it is. They are not. No, the Bene Gesserit. Thank you. No, it's a saying. Oh, you're trying to throw to me?
Yeah.
You're trying to fucking throw to me?
I'm trying to get you fucked up.
Oh, you want to get me fucking crazy? I have a lot of coffee today.
I mean, I will say, by the way, you know, coming from, I think, not the same place that we're looking at gender nowadays, gender actually does come into play in a huge way. I mean, even in the fourth book with the all-woman army.
Oh, yeah, and that's sexy as hell, man. This is honestly, this is just sort of like what I've always wanted. The idea of being a god emperor in charge of all of these, like, buxom Amazon warrior women.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, like, my fucking sweet spot,
and there were thoughts towards, that's jumping away ahead, but there are thoughts towards having an all-female army and as how that is superior to an all-male army based on kind of notions about male and female, which is fascinating, kind of an interesting thought.
We'll get to it, but Leto 2 specifically said men are too emotional to be good warriors.
Yes.
Which I think is very interesting. Same thing with the Bene Gesserit. So Duke Leto.
And don't worry about the fact that he just said Leto 2. We're not going to worry about that at
all. Oh, yeah, you should. That was another, it's so hard. Don't talk about this shit. But so Jessica's in love with Duke Leto.
Yes.
She lets him gush inside and she gives him a son, Paul. Now, Paul was not supposed to be born. Paul is a young man that also, he immediately seems to have innate abilities that other kids don't have. He has dreams that can see the future. He is very good at immediately accepting Bene Gesserit teachings because he starts teaching him very, very early on all the tricks and trades of the Bene Gesserit. The thing is that this was all not supposed to happen. And everyone kind of knows it was not supposed to happen. But Duke Leto is super happy because he has an heir and it's all ready to go. So right now, this is the very beginning, is that Duke Leto has defeated House Harkonnen in essentially what they, there's some kind of interwar they have, and they have a thing in Dune called Conley, which is a type of, I don't know how you'd put it, it's parlay. So when two people, like, when you have an official, the emperor, like, so there's an emperor of the entire universe, right? The emperor sort of sanctions these houses to have wars with each other, and then they enter into a term, a series of conditions called Conley. They're having this war over Dune, and they basically said, okay, the emperor came in, y'all, it's over, Atreides won officially. So that means, Atreides, you all get the very special real estate grant of you are now the Duke of Arrakis, right? So Duke Leto has this shit kind of thrown onto his lap. You are now in charge of Arrakis, which is something he didn't even really want.
Right.
Because he knew, as you read in the book, as soon as he finds out that he's supposed to be the Duke of Arrakis, he's like, I'm fucked.
Yes.
Because it is what...
It's like getting Hand of the King in Lord of the Game of Thrones, actually.
They always
it's
die.
The same thing. Like, no one ever has a good time being Hand of the King. It's always like a weird jail sentence, even though it's a high position of power.
Well, it's because he also knows, in a little bit, that I've been put into a trap. Because the Duke Leto's up against the Baron Harkonnen. The Baron Harkonnen is a... He's cute. He's fun. And he is... there's nothing he likes better than a nice, sweet, fresh young boy.
So can you actually describe what he really looks like as opposed to cute and fun? Because it's definitely...
He is an immensely fat, covered with boils,
yes.
Loves human flesh. He has people, like, he has people attached to him, like, guys that come up to him, he's like, let me have your heart, let me have your heart. And then you pop open, like, a can of Pringles on their chest, and blood pumps out, and then he fucking licks it and eats it. And he just loves little boy cum.
He's just the ultimate symbol of indulgence.
And he is
Epstein times 100.
A billion, and he's on suspensor lifts, because he's so fat that he can't move, so he's on these suspensor lifts. I don't know if you've seen the David Lynch Dune at home when that fucking great scene where he goes and starts spinning on the ceiling and shit,
right.
Which is the only fucking, that's me, dude. When I got news of we sold Dunecast, I went and I floated to the ceiling.
And I went wee, wee, wee all the way home. And by that, I mean I pissed as I walked home.
That's actually
yes, I like to leave
a problem.
I call it leaving my snail trail.
That's actually already a term.
Yeah.
That's more of
right.
a, yeah, I would just call that your deek leak. to use a little bit of Arakeen. that's my Arakeen.
So Harkonnen, but you, also the emperor himself, to pull the curtain back a little bit more, is really the one fucking...
that's where you Leto. Really get to. When you read it, the very beginning of Dune has a sort of like breakdown of like just how and what way they are fucking with Leto, right? It's because Leto's a goody two-shoes. He is lawful good.
Yes.
He is an excellent soldier. He leads by example. His men love him. His women love him. Jessica desperately wants to be married to him, but he can't marry his concubine. That's what they call them. He can't marry Jessica because if he does, it takes him off the plate for other people, because basically he's trying to do strategic weddings to somebody else within the Landsrad to like shore up allyship.
That's
right?
A big part of this whole series is not particularly being married or having babies with a person you're actually in love with or necessarily even like, because you just need to create these heirs and create these deep
that is
lineages.
Literally marriage before 1965.
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
It's the same shit, but so he can't marry her. So he's trying to do it the right way. But guess what? No one really likes the fucking goody two-shoes.
Yeah.
Because you know what happens? It's that Duke Leto who shows up and he has all these ideas of like, I want to do regulations and I want to clean up all the corruption and all the smugglers. Because what you're going to find out is that there's a thing called CHOME. There's a lot of like economic shit inside of Dune that I just kind of, my eyes kind of glaze over, but it's important to understand.
And makes for really good real-time strategy games, and we'll talk about that in the video.
Can't wait. Can't fucking wait. Because yeah, it's the stuff that doesn't bore me in Civ 6,
it's like
but bores me in a book.
Shit, yeah, in a fun sci-fi epic, yeah.
Yes, but he essentially, there are smugglers that have been fucking, everybody's getting a cut off of Dune. The thing is, what was nice about having Harkonnen in charge of Dune is that everybody was getting a fucking piece, right? Everybody was going in, smuggling in and out, and the Emperor himself, even the Emperor, is so interested in keeping his own piece of the smuggling that's going on in Dune, which is people like siphoning off the top, because what they're trying to do, like the real, it's this is where it gets into kind of economics, because their goal is to create so much their own holds of spice, right? That's kind of what I understand. Upon my fifth rereading of Dune, I started to start to understand the economic part of it, which is that Harkonnen and the Emperor understood the only way to get independence from Arrakis, because that's what they're desperate for. They're so sick of whoever's in charge of Arrakis, so they're working on getting their own storehouse of the spice. Because from then, whoever's had the Duchy of Arrakis has had far too much power, and the Emperor doesn't like dealing with anybody who's below him having too much power, and they have all these kind of complicated shit, because Chome is like where water comes in and out of Arrakis, which is one way to smuggle. They're fucking with the water on Arrakis, tightening the leash on whoever's there by basically saying, you're going to give me what you want, or I'm not going to fucking give you water. But it turns out there might be more water on Arrakis than they thought. Ooh. And there are also people saying like, oh, I just don't want to deal with anybody on this planet. So we need to have so much money. It's so much. I say money, I mean spice, that we never have to deal with these motherfuckers ever again. Kind of like a Bezos situation or a Musk situation. Why people acquire so much capital. Because the point is to essentially become, within your own country, your own little country.
He who has the spice has
controls the universe.
Controls it all. And so, yeah, exactly. It's the Tesla of this world. Or actually, I guess rather, it's the Amazon of this world. Because, you know, it's sort of like how people's serotonin goes up every time they get a dumb fuck package in the mail. In
yes.
A two-day cycle.
So now Conley has been instituted. So the fucking Duke has got control of Arrakis. Hey, what Vladimir Harkonnen calls it, which I love, the ultimate man trap. Because he knows that he has the Leto deep in his hands. Because the one thing that starts at the very beginning of the book, they're all just talking about how Duke Leto's just dead. He might as well be dead. And meanwhile, I was like, that guy's alive.
This is
no
where,
one seems to give a fuck about
this
Duke
is where Leto. I want to kind of come in and talk about the difficulty for me of the opening pages of this book. And a thing that I have to wrestle with, I think, throughout a lot of different sections of this book, and now I kind of love it about it, is that a lot of it reminds me of dream logic.
Yes.
Like, Leto is in this situation he knows he shouldn't be in, and yet he's just going forward with it. And as much as everyone's like, you know, you're fucked, right? And he's just like, I am, but I'm just going to keep going forward. It's like being in a dream where you're like, why am I even in this haunted house? I know the house is going to kill me, but I'm here because I'm in a dream and I'm like trapped in the dream's momentum.
He's also never had a challenge that he's never not surmounted with his wit, his honor, and his power. So his whole thing is, what he said, the best part about having a trap is that knowing of the trap is half the battle, right? So he knows he's entering into a trap. But what he doesn't understand, I think that now, this current rereading of it, is that he's not in Harkonnen's trap. He's in Jessica's trap. And he never knew that he was, but Jessica never thought of it as a trap.
Right.
She never thought that her love for him would actually be the thing that doomed them. But in a way, they thought that when Leto would show up to Arrakis, because again, like the end of Dune 1, it starts with the good guys winning. So the good guys have won. So there's this like kind of flickering thought that being like, okay, finally, somebody who has some sense is going to be taking control over this very important part. Somebody's going to finally go and do all the things that they need to do. And Jessica, I think, is almost in her way, kind of like, I feel this. I feel like, and even though I'm wise with the Bene Gesserit feeling, I know that like, well, maybe if anybody can see his way out of this bullshit, it's him. It's my Duke. My Duke will figure it out. But she doesn't understand that when she gave him Paul, she fucked up this whole thing, because now we're back to Paul. Paul, the very beginning of this book, is dreaming. He's there. He's asleep in his bed. Little Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah, I was about to say, imagine Timothy Chalamet sort of reciting Shakespeare in his sleep. Yeah.
I used to summer in Italy every year. That's my Timothy Chalamet. My Timothy Chalamet ding dong impression. It normally involves someone who is too hungry to stand.
Another important little tidbit that I didn't catch on to until later is like, this actually exists in a far future of our actual world. Like, so, they yes. comment on actual history on Earth. They talk about literature from, before times.
Because between now and what is our Earth, there was a thing called the Butlerian Jihad, which is a fun name, but the whole thing was about...
But Larry! Jihad it!
That's great. Save that.
That was, yeah.
That Save was that really... for your album.
Let me repeat the joke, because I feel like most of you guys didn't get it
Larry.
Out there. I have an hard time seeing you guys at the lights, but I'm pretty sure I should have heard louder laughter from the audience at this point in my stand-up special.
Larry!
He
is having a stream. Timothy Chalamet Ding Dong is actually a really good casting for Paul, because he's supposed to be 15. He's supposed to be
Faye.
Small for his age. He's clever afoot, and his whole thing is that I would put him as a neutral good because of what goes on in his future. He looks up to his father. He loves his father. But he seems to understand things are not right at the very beginning.
I like you say neutral, somewhere in between order and chaos, because I think he sees how fucked up full order is.
Well, because his Duke Leto thinks
does that, right? He plays by the rules, and he gets completely, spoiler alert, ass fucked.
Because he was a goody-two-shoes. And what you find out is in this world, especially in the world of Arrakis, it's dangerous, man.
Yeah.
And it's not good to be the one person that's trying to, like, bring everything back to a quote-unquote normal. Because there are a lot of people that lose money when things are brought to a quote-unquote normal. And I don't know what that's remotely comparison to. I don't know what you think. What is that like?
Story of this country, which, again, I know it's like a dumb analogy, but I think it's why we had that analogy in our notes. Because
yes.
It really is that way, right? Like, the moment you see someone come into power who has actual decent intentions.
Or you think they do.
They just get, either way, they get fucking steamrolled by the billionaires that have been
they don't
incessantly
give a fuck.
Profiting off
it's
of
It's the whole thing where
how fucked up it is.
All the smuggling on Arrakis is not a bug, it's a feature. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's a built-in part of it. It's supposed to be a corrupt place. So this guy is a fucking mark. Paul, though, is living a life that he was never supposed to live. And the very beginning is that he wakes up to his mother, big buxom mother, staring at him. God, Jessica, so hot. I mean, honestly, and Rebecca Ferguson in the movies are a fucking, fucking cutie patootie as well. But they look at him, and he knows something's up. He's immediately thrown into the world of the Bene Gesserit. Now, Paul was not supposed to get any of this training. He was not supposed to be taught how to use the voice, which we'll talk about in a later episode. He was not supposed to know how to truth say, which is one of these things.
These are all Bene Gesserit
abilities. He can see when people are telling the truth. He can tell he can watch your every move, kind of like the way Sherlock Holmes used to do, where you could tell like somebody's like profession by the way they walk and shit like that. He's that type. He has that skill set. And he immediately is tested by this Reverend Mother, which you'd see excellently parodied in Henry Zebrowski's The Characters on Netflix. where he is has to put, this is where the scene, the where he puts his hands in the box, right, to find out whether or not he is a human or an animal. So he is threatened by the Gom Jabbar. It's a great, one of my favorite scenes in all literature, where he is sitting there, he is forced to put his hand in this box. The Reverend Mother, like, who is essentially Jessica's fucking boss, shows up with this thing called the Gom Jabbar, which is essentially like a thimble with a needle on it that she presses to his neck, essentially saying, you move from your hand from this box, I'm going to stab you in the neck, you're going to be fucking dead in a second. And he's just like, oh no, because it's Timothée Chalamet. And so he puts his hand in there, he experienced such an incredible amount of pain, right, that he thinks that his skin is boiling and ripping from the bones, and he's I must leave it in the box.
It reminds, have you ever seen those red ant bags?
Yeah, dude.
That you have to, oh, I can feel it myself, like I feel the pain myself when I think
so
about it.
So fucking sweet. But he puts his hand in the box. She threatens to get him, but because he doesn't remove it, it shows that he is a human and not an animal. Because an animal would go as far as to chew their own leg off to take themselves out of a trap, where a human can see that it's not, in fact, a trap at all. And that when he removes his hand from the box, his hand is completely fine. And he's like, what? What? Was his fucking no.
Yeah, he becomes Tim the Toolman Taylor.
Immediately.
And starts hosting a show
Tim
on
Allen
Arrakis.
Should have been Paul Atreides. But this is my one like thing in Dune. The reason why I love Dune is because I am not, I don't know if you can tell, I'm a bit of a contrarian. And people would say that sometimes I'm just like not a lot of fun. Like I don't like what other people like. That's what makes me super cool, right?
Right.
It's super. I'm too edgy for life.
Yeah, you're my like, mean devil friend. Or
fucking,
whatever.
I like the villains.
Yeah.
I like. I've always been that way since I was a little kid. I've always liked the villains more than the heroes. I think there's a lot of people like that. But I always sided with whoever looked the most evil. I love them. But this is a series where I love the heroes because they are not pure heroes. Because pure heroes I don't get. The only pure hero I love is Dale Cooper from Twin Peaks. That is my only like, pure hero.
And
where,
even he has, like, he goes to the dark side. Or
he's the only one who can handle the dark side completely because he's so pure on the inside.
Yeah.
This shows immediately that there are hinks within this idea of creating a Neo. Because as soon as that Paul shows that he's a human, it's the first sign of, oh no, is this the aforementioned Quetzalcoatl, right? Is this the one, is this the kid? Because everybody's mad at Jessica. She was not supposed to have a son. It fucked up generations of control over DNA lines, right?
Well, and I was going to say too, and then it takes that question of, oh, is he Neo? And like, if you think about even the Matrix in the same vein, it's like, do we want to break people out of the Matrix? Is Neo actually a good thing for humanity and the world? And I think that's kind of where the book takes us to and where the rest of the series ends up trying to answer that question. I think that's the fascinating angle to Dune, is it doesn't just give you this like Luke Skywalker and give you this amazing hero journey. It totally gives you that.
It does.
But then it also goes like, yeah, but is that actually a good thing?
Because I start to wonder, because the Bene Gesserit has been talking about this Quetzalcoatl for so long, right? And this idea of this fabled dude. Because the idea is that the Bene Gesserit, they can share memories with each other. So each Reverend Mother, as they die, has to give their memories to another Reverend Mother. So anybody that is a trained Aedep within the Bene Gesserit shares memories of every only female line that is behind them. So they can see all of these memories, right? They have access to this giant collective unconscious. Because remember, there are no machines. So all of these various little groups have decided to train and hone the human mind to act as if they were computers versus just flawed-filled goops of shit.
And Henry's introducing this idea now of being able to delve back into every like ancestral line's memories and to inform oneself. This is actually one of the probably most repeated concepts and themes of the entire series.
Yes.
So that is actually a very important bullet point. And I actually did not realize that began with them and this thing, this concept you're talking about.
That's why we're doing this fucking show.
Yeah.
I'll wrestle you to the fucking ground and I'll teach you, everything.
Before we started, I refuse to allow you to do it again.
We must wrestle before the end of this limited series and see who physically can beat the other.
See who can get the other person's shoes off.
Yeah, and then I guess we'll fucking kiss.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Why did I... Hey, yeah.
In front of our wives.
Hey, man, that's front row tickets.
The Freeman ceremony that will be complete then, and then we'll drink the water of the worm. I've already have a worm farm I've been harvesting in my office.
I
want to
trip balls,
department.
Dude. But you see, the Bene Gesserit can only look into the female line. The Kwisatz Haderach, though, can look to where none of them, what they say, the unlookable place, which is into the male side of all of their memories. It's very gendered, and I don't completely understand why, but this is Frank Herbert's world. We're just living in it.
Yeah, completely.
So they think, oh God, he might be the Kwisatz Haderach. But this is the thing. This is where I start to realize. They wanted this Kwisatz fucking Haderach. They've been talking about this shit for generations. They've then got one on accident. And then they're super pissed about it. They don't want the Paul. They're very mad at Jessica for doing this, especially the very beginning.
What does their prophecy foretell a Kwisatz Haderach doing?
I think that they
why are they afraid of it?
Because of how powerful this person is. The prophecy is how powerful this person's supposed to be.
It'll steal their shine.
But what I don't think that they understood is that when they created a Neo, why do you think you'd be able to control Neo?
Right.
You created the most powerful entity, quote unquote, in the universe, so now you also expect him to be this, like, funny, like, do whatever the fuck it is that you say?
Yeah.
No, because Paul is immediately, he's a little brat, right? Again, also perfect for Timothée Chalamet Ding Dong, right? He's a little brat, and he's immediately just being like, I resent what you have all thrust upon me, this terrible purpose.
There's your hero, ladies and gentlemen, there he is.
I don't believe that I should be at the puppet strings of the Bene Gesserit. And they look at him and they're immediately like, who's this little fucking bitch? Tell me what to do. But they also did not fucking fully read what's going on, because the Messiah has been born and the Messiah is out the fucking stable and it is going whether they like it or not.
And classically, the Messiah, and I know we're going to wait on talking about the Freeman for later.
Up,
of
dog.
Course, the Messiah is going to tap into the poor and the kind of... Well, not cast away, but sort of this, like, massive numbers of desert people.
Well, this is where they get
going to flip the whole thing in its head.
This is where they really get lumped in the pussy, is because when they're putting all of this shit together. Yeah, I'm blowing through that.
We can keep moving past that.
When they put all of that shit together, the Bene Gesserit doesn't just control bloodlines. They also control the religious myths of the entire universe. They have this thing called the Missionaria Productivia, which is this, they send out members of the Bene Gesserit to all corners of the universe. And what they do is go to various, what they would consider, quote unquote, primitive civilizations that haven't yet fully gotten the touch of Bene Gesserit. And what they do is insinuate themselves inside of these groups and create myths and mythoses for them to later complete in order to basically fool various races across the world. So what they did, an example is, here on Arrakis, as it seems that the Fremen already have this, like, as the Duke Leto arrives, they have this sort of, like, mumbling thing about how there is supposed to be this special boy that is born out of, out of love, but against duty for the Bene Gesserit. There's supposed to be this, like, boy, Modib, the desert mouse, which rifling through the Fremen, but it was placed there by Bene Gesserit, like, a millennia ago, but now their prophet has shown up. And can you imagine being like, this is like one thing we were talking about, that you arrive in Arrakis, Paul has already been told by his mother that your dad's fucking dead here. Nobody cares, right? Nobody gives a shit.
This is really the truth. And one of the most weirdest things that throw you off right at the very beginning is just like what you think is the main character, totally the Ned Stark, right? I hate to make too many Game of Thrones.
It is very much
Ned Stark.
I hate
to make too many Game of Thrones, but he's just the lamb for the slaughter. And you think he's, like, I guess you kind of know Paul's the main character. But if you don't know, like, I didn't fully know. I thought, you know, Leto is going to do a little bit more in this whole thing.
I thought he'd get more fights
in. Yeah,
because
yeah.
He seems like a fucking badass.
Right.
And I use, with beak and claw, we will rise above as hawks among lesser birds.
Yeah.
That's my favorite toast. I do that toast at home.
Fantastic. I love it. You think he's going to do some crazy shit.
But Manny just... got fucking giddy, dog.
Yeah, in this weird way, though, too, because Frank Herbert can never just have him be stabbed in the back.
But that's the best part about Frank Herbert.
He's got to have like a poison capsule in his teeth.
Oh, we'll get there. It's so good. But so Paul... he's getting lessons, right? So, you know, he has trainers. So here's, well, let's introduce you to some of his other, these boys,
yeah,
dog.
It's time to bring the boys.
Paul's dog. Paul's
boys down.
Gertie Halleck, who is just the funniest, coolest dude in the motherfucking book, right? Gertie Halleck, he's the weapons master. He trains Paul, this little boy, in how to fight. They have this thing called like the many wanded fighting tree. That's like one of the weird things that David Lynch got right in that movie, which is like that tree thing that Kyle MacLachlan fights.
Mm-hmm.
Gertie Halleck trains him on that. He's got this balisette, which I believe is somewhere between a violin and a guitar that he brings everywhere. And he's always got
bard. Yeah, he's the bard.
But he's got an inky vine, this like scar on the front of his face that comes from being tortured by the Harkonnens. He hates Harkonnens. He hates into this fucking, all his fucking guts. And he is, he's played by Patrick Stewart in the movie. When you read books, do you imagine actors when you read books?
I definitely imagine them even if I haven't seen the movie, if like, I know that they're the character of the movie, but no. And again, like I imagine you as that worm god.
Because in my mind, because it's like when I'm reading Dune, it's like I see Kyle MacLachlan, obviously, as Paul, and then all the other characters from the David Lynch movie, Paul, but except I make Duncan Idaho, another one of Paul's buddies, who is one of the swashbuckling dude that for some reason becomes this massive part of the sextology. I don't particularly understand, but as we talk, we will talk more and more about Duncan Idaho. His name pops up again and again, but I imagine him as Carl Urban for some reason.
I imagine him, and again, I don't even think about Game of Thrones this much, but it's just been in my head, I guess. But the Onion Thief, that guy, the bearded guy.
Right?
That's him, right?
That's Gurney Halleck. In my mind, I'd put him as a Gurney Halleck.
Gurney Halleck, I see him as Duncan Idaho because he's like weathered.
He's handsome.
Been through shit, but he's handsome enough, but he's also, and I'm thinking actually, by the way, it's hard because I have to separate it out. The version of Duncan Idaho that is that, the Onion Thief character guy, is in like book, that's like book three and book four.
Yes.
Like, it's
yes.
like the weathered, the kind of frustrated, bewildered, why am I still in this book series version of Duncan Idaho
he's
that
fun.
We get to?
He gets, he, but in this
he
one, he's
very
like,
fun.
He's like a swashbuckling
yes.
guy, right?
He's slick.
But that's another one of Paul's trainers. And then the other one is Thufir Hawat, who is one, it is the House Atreides warrior Mentat. Now, Mentats we'll cover in another episode.
But basically, what's a Mentat?
They're human computers.
Yes.
They're trained to be essentially like, you shoot them a bunch of choices, both political and not, and their jobs are to come up with like and take all of the factors and variants of like different things of like highly complex issues, like all these kind of shit, and their brains kind of go like, and then they come up with like what they consider to be the most logical response.
Now, you brought up something earlier that I actually want to go back to because we're talking about this, because I never thought too deeply about this. Is there a reason why there aren't actual computers?
Well, it's because the Butlerian Jihad happened in the before world of Dune, which was essentially a massive revolt of humankind against thinking computers that had taken over the world. So what they're stipulating is that this is the year that this happens is the year 10,193 in our world.
Yes.
So 8,000 years from now is when Dune is happening.
Okay.
And so
the Butlerian Jihad is essentially just hopefully what's going to happen when we finally reach the true culmination of how shitty Twitter is.
I guess, but also I think we should give the robots a shot.
Okay.
I think that they should wait. I think that humans have shown.
You just want to play your weird games with them.
Yeah, I do.
Deep in
the closet. I want to be a jester for a series of AIs. I'm one of the good ones. Listen to me, machines. I'm one of the good ones. But he also has a teacher named Dr. Yui. Dr. Yui is a part of I forget what the term is. He's like this conditioned, imperial conditioned doctor. So the goal is that he's supposed to be incorruptible. And he teaches Paul all the shit that Paul needs to know before he gets to the planet. Now, imagine this fucking Holden, right? Imagine that you were a young kid And you're supposed to go, you're moving to a new state, right? You're moving to another country or some shit. You don't know anything about this because you're moving to fucking Lithuania.
I'd have been such a fucking prick about that. God. You should have seen me when they changed high schools.
I had friends.
Or fifth grade, I changed schools. I was just like, yeah.
I had friends.
Yeah. I don't want to, Daddy.
This is what Paul does.
Yes.
But imagine you showed up in a place that you don't know, you don't speak the language, what's going on. And not only are they, like, everyone's kind of running scared around you. You're 15 years old. But then they show you footage of murals inside of caves that look just like you, that have been painted that by people 1,000 years ago that say, this is going to be our prophet that's going to lead us to actual ownership of this planet one day. Can you imagine the head trip of being 15 years old and literally they're like, yeah, some of these cave people for some reason think you're a god. And then he has to like, oh, Daddy, I wish it wasn't so. I wish to play with the Spherods and Kaladin. But actually, in the end, he kind of gets hardened. That's why he's truly his Dooku.
Well, you
got
to go out to the fucking desert, bro.
That's what happens, Dad. Up. Fucking rips you up.
Hardened in a couple ways, because he also does get that Channy. Yeah, Channy.
He loves that Channy. So that's Paul's basic team in the very beginning.
Yes.
And then we all will slowly meet, because the thing about the Harkonnen team.
Who else do we need in Harkonnen? Harkonnen, we've got.
Well, we got Pitter.
Yes.
Who's the fucking. I love this character played by Brad Dourif in the fucking David Lynch movies.
First book, right?
He's only in the first book. Yes. First book. He kind of pops up as a ghost in book 2 and 3. Like, there's some shit like that.
And actually, weirdly enough, also in the movie Ghost, which no one explains.
Weird.
It.
Being like, why is Pitter the Mentat here?
In
what's
that
the
subway
spice?
Scene when they're running through.
The spice must flow. You wonder why they had that whole thing about sandworms in the middle of that movie? That's why. Deep cut.
That's why Whoopi Goldberg's like, what is the spice?
Whoopi's the Dunehead. I'm certain. That was what she pitched.
That's my Whoopi Goldberg impression. What's the spice?
That's perfect. SNL, I've got your new boy here.
Whoopi Goldberg, I was married to Tech.
Good Lord.
Also love Imprecious, who just say the name of who they are.
It's important.
Facts about themselves.
How else are people supposed to know? That's what I do. That's how you know. That's how you do an impression.
Robert De Niro, and I was in Goodfellas, huh?
Little bit. Well, I'm a master of impressions.
You're fantastic at it.
Oh, I'm Al Pacino.
I'm
a Shakespeare.
It's Petty. What's the name? It's me. It's Petty.
Yeah, I'm Tom Petty.
I'm Petty.
I'm Tom Petty.
And I'm Joe Pesci.
Oh, this is great at fucking episode, man. That's a great fucking episode, dude. But then there's also Fade Rautha, his nephew. Now, one thing about Baron Harkonnen is
Harkonnen's nephew, yeah.
Yeah, Fade Rautha is, he thinks that his own nephew's very sexy. And they really hit that. Because what's weird is the book shows Harkonnen is like almost sad about what he has to do to Duke Leto. Because what we are now going to find out is that Duke Leto has what's called a feint within a feint within a feint. Which is also a term that comes up in Dune quite a bit. Where he is ready to get Leto's goat. He hates how handsome Duke Leto is. He hates how much everybody fucking respects Duke Leto, because Baron Harkonnen does not care about respect or anything. All he cares about is money and power. And that's all he wants. It's really strange how all of this really is about money, weirdly.
And what's funny, though, too, is that, like, and again, this speaks to that kind of lame analogy at the very beginning, is like, that does kind of remind me of our former president. This is like, he's got all this money, he's got all this stuff, but yes. He'll never be pretty.
And never be pretty, never be liked by the right people.
Yeah, and like, that's always what's just going to be at the heart of all of the dumb, shitty, petty stuff that
it's
they
just
do.
Interesting, but how in the first book, Harkonnen is labeled as like the villain of all villains, right? Mm. But he actually has sympathy for Leto. And he has like these like weird moments where it's like, because technically he has this like way in. So what he has done is that he has corrupted Dr. Yui, who has these conditioning, this imperial conditioning, which is supposed to never be broken. He's supposed to be incorruptible, but they've managed to get to him, which he says, every man has his lever. Which I think actually is very true. You can break a man.
And we're talking about mental games here. We're not even talking about bribes or anything like that. Like, it's literally just them.
Well, he's got his wife. Basically, he's been torturing Dr. Yui's wife for a very long time.
Now it comes back.
Oh, yep. This is the problem with us having wives. Holden.
Well, and
that it gives us something to lose, dude. This is our problem. We are giving our enemies levers
yes.
because we allow ourselves to feel love. Any person in Dune that loves dies.
I was about to say, love is the catalyst for all shenaniganry.
In the entire book. Every single thing.
I literally wanted to say Gutted for Dune. I was going to say it should just be called Dune 4, The Fifth Element.
It is true.
That is what it should be called.
It really true.
It is just the key to all chinks in the armor, let's say.
There's something about this idea, because Frank Herbert, again, married, loves his wife. Obviously, loved Brian Herbert, didn't beat him with a fucking stick.
Right.
But also, he is just saying that love makes you weak. That every single time you love, you're distracted. Your head's on a fucking, you're not on the proper swivel.
But that makes so much sense because all of this is just a bunch of different groups. The Bene Gesserit, Harkonnens, the Emperor himself. Everybody is just a bunch of different groups trying to plan out the next, 3,000 years of a human existence.
And guess what the problem is? Is that when you decide in this idea that I can accurately predict the future of how humans will behave, you find that it doesn't work out like that at all.
Living in New York City, the books. When you go to New York, the first thing you learn is everything's out of your control. And as soon as you try to control, the way your day is going to go,
you just get slammed in the face.
The opposite at the moment you, but as long as you're willing to just kind of go with the flow, the spice flow.
Hmm.
Then you may prevail.
Very
so,
good turn. So very good. Yui, bring it back. Bring it back to Spice. Very good.
Right. Yui now is he regretfully too. He's in this shitty position where he does not want to do this to Leto.
He does not want to.
But he is now in Harkonnen's pocket.
So Harkonnen knows that. All right, I have this. I'm gonna get Duke Leto. I'm gonna get my ultimate revenge. I am going to go in now that he's doing his fun little games. He's taking over Arrakis. I'm gonna go. I'm taking Arrakis back. I have. What turns out to be the full backing of the Emperor, because that's also sort of a reveal that the Emperor, even though he loved Duke Leto and even admitted to his own daughter, I wish that he was my son, he also can't let Duke Leto fuck with his money or fuck with his spice. So, and he knows when it comes down to it, we got to get this fucking guy out of there. He believes up to a point he can control Harkonnen, because Harkonnen really does, in his way, have simple tastes. He just likes money. Violence,
human blood,
boy dick. He loves boy dick. And then when you find out is that he promised Jessica, so he's gonna flip him from the inside, and he has promised Jessica to Peter, which is not good, because Peter's like, I will show her all of my different machinations of pain.
Disgusting in these books.
They will see when she goes into my pain chambers what shall happen to Jessica, who lost his
body. Actually, let's go back to the boy dick, because I'd rather be in boy dick right now.
Who lost his globes. I want to see the points on her globes. Point towards me. But Harkonnen also, and the problem is that Harkonnen, he's looking for Paul. He wants some of that. It was a couple slices of that 15-year-old boy. But
that PD, that Paul dick.
Paul dick. And this is where we're at. The first quarter of this book, this trap is unleashed on the Duke Leto. Now, he thought he got all this shit set up. One of my favorite scenes in the very beginning is the dinner scene.
Uh-huh.
When he does that first, because Duke Leto, it's very much like JFK in my mind. Because when last podcast did the JFK series, it's like one thing we kept saying, he's like the most murdered man who ever lived. There was just so many people trying to kill him.
Yeah.
And any one go. And there's so many people trying to fucking kill this dude. And he has this scene where he basically tells all of these shitheads that have had this very comfortable world on Dune how shit gone done change around here. Because what he finds out when he arrives is that apparently, so the one thing is that they flaunt how much water that they can have. The leaders of Dune, a prerequisite is to sort of boast about how much water you have access to versus anybody else.
Water is the OLED 4K flat screen TV, the Tesla, let's say, of Arrakis.
They love it.
Not to say Tesla again in this episode, but it is that.
Sponsor us, Tesla.
Oh, please, Tesla, sponsor us. I need a self-driving car. I will kill my wife and future child.
Give him a self-driving car. He cannot be driving.
But it is that ultimate luxury item, the fancy Nike shoes of Arrakis is water.
But basically, he found out that they would take the extra water from this party, and was common courtesy for them to go and sop it all up, because they do this kind of ceremony where they pour water on the ground, and then one of the Fremen housekeepers will go and sop it all up with a rag, and then charge people to get a drop of it, where she would squeeze it into their mouths. And he was like, fuck that. We're not gonna, I'm changing shit. We're not going to boast about our water fatness anymore, which is the term that they come up with. And so he changes everything. He like throws over the bowls. He does this whole thing. Basically, he calls out everybody at this fucking party. They all know it's a huge mistake, all the smugglers. And then there's a guy that's obviously a Harkonnen agent. And there was another little girl that was put there to fuck Paul just to like get into his head, to try to play with his 15-year-old mind. But for some reason, Paul is the least horny 15-year-old I've ever seen. He really is. And that's his power. And I would say the same thing with L. Ron Hubbard. Is the reason why L. Ron Hubbard did so well for so long is because his penis didn't really get involved.
Right. But I thought he was a horny man later in life.
No.
Oh, okay. I thought he was a horny weirdo.
No, he was not. Yeah, LRH actually never really used the penis much. He didn't get wrapped up into it. He made a bunch of people dress in like admiral outfits and shit, but he never made them molest.
Right, but I would also attribute that to just having a deeply intense speed addiction as well. But
he couldn't get it up. Yeah, and also, Paul, he's a lover.
Right.
Just like his father. Because his father was the same way. His father just loved his fucking concubine. He didn't love anybody else. And he regretted forever that he wouldn't get a chance to marry Jessica.
Paul's also a mopey mope.
He's a mopey mope. He's like Hamlet.
Yeah.
He's a goth superhero.
Yes.
This is very much, I saw one joke on, I believe it was on Twitter, that called Dune Star Wars for goths.
Yeah.
Which is very true. Because you see, because they talk about him laconically, like sitting in a lounge, and you know, and Duke Leto's like, he would bear the address of Duke very well. Because he likes somebody who holds his shit together. He doesn't like somebody who's fucking a frivolous nitwit. Right? So the trap is sprung. Duke Leto is surprised. They try to kill Paul. They manage to get away. One of my favorite scenes in the whole book was when Dr. Yui, he's the one that captures Duke Leto. He basically says, I'm sorry, I got to do this. They got my wife. But what we're going to do is I need you to kill Baron Harkonnen. And what I'm going to do is have this tooth. I'm going to have this hollowed out tooth. I'm going to put it into your mouth.
Yeah.
And then when you are presented to the Baron, you're going to bite on the tooth, release this poison gas, and you're going to blow it into his face and kill him.
Yeah. Super fucking cool way to kill
someone.
Fucking
dope.
Absolutely.
This is where Frank Herbert's imagination, I think, is absolutely incredible. I love it because he has to come up with all of these sort of like hyper analog ways to do things.
And it's got
to
be mousetrap. It's got to be, speaking of analog, but also it's got to be like, this will knock this over, which will lead to this. So it's like, we've got
it
you
took
captured.
Him 6 years to write these fucking books.
Exactly, right? We've got you captured, but I'm going to give you the tooth, but then you have to do that. And then obviously, it does not go as to plan.
It does not. He ends up only killing Peter in the exchange, which is so sad that we only had Peter for so long.
Oh,
he was one
yeah,
of my fucking favorites.
I really wish you could have done that impression for episode after episode.
I will continue to do the voice of Peter. No, I will look at her moist, round bush.
So I'm busy this weekend.
I want to pleasure her mounds with my knife.
I mean,
needles.
With my girlfriends, and we're going to the mall to get our. I can't.
Can I come, or is it women only?
It's really just the girls for this one, but I'll call ya.
I don't think she is going to call Peter.
I love him. It's sad that he died, but Baron Harkonnen, it just misses him. But then he realizes is that he surrounded himself by these emperor's troops. And then he realizes that not only, so Duke is gone, right? So he set up this whole plan that Jessica and Paul would be immediately killed. And this is also how you know that the Baron Harkonnen is actually not as bad as you'd think he was, because he was supposed to give Jessica over to Peter to be essentially tortured to death. And then he was supposed to suck Paul until Paul was a fucking empty bag, right?
Right.
As it turns out, he wasn't that stuck on it, because what he did, so Jessica is bound, right? Like down on the ground. And then she sees a burp, 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 burp. She sees him float in, right? Because the one thing about Baron Harkonnen is that they say he glides. It's because he's got these like sensor things like lifting him up like he's fucking Louis Anderson in a fucking wrecking ball
situation.
It's like
he's in Cirque du Soleil, but you know, for fat people.
It's fun for him. So he rolls and she wakes up to see him, but he gives Peter a choice. So they sit there and she's supposed to go to the pain tanks and Paul's supposed to be there, but he looks at Peter and he's like, I'll give you a choice, Peter. You can take the woman and exile from the Imperium.
or the duchy of Atreides on Arrakis to rule as you see fit in my name. And so he basically says, what if I give you this shit, right? But meanwhile, Jessica knows in the meantime what that means is they're all dead. Anybody that Baron Harkonnen like says anything to, they are dead, right? Because he's constantly backstabbing anybody around him. But he looked at Jessica, and the way he views Jessica as a tool, and that what he thought Peter was going to do to her was such a waste of this incredible tool. The way he put it was, understand yourself, Peter. You want her because she was a duke's woman, a symbol of his power, beautiful, useful, exquisitely trained for her role. But an entire duchy, Peter, that's more than a symbol. That's the reality. With it, you can have many women and more.
So what the fuck does he do with Jessica?
He fucking gives him the fucking, they go, they bound Jessica and Paul, and then they do the thing that every overconfident villain always does.
Right.
Which I think is on purpose.
Leave them for dead.
Basically, he says, we're going to go, we'll drop them in the desert. The desert's going to handle them. They don't know anything about the desert, but they don't understand that Paul's actually been highly, highly trained to deal with the desert. So has Jessica. They already had a meeting with Liette Keen, so we're going to talk about next episode, who is the planet ecologist, who is a off-worlder dude that has insituated himself so deep into the Fremen, like studying Arrakis. Like he is there, he's part of, and they actually learn quite a bit on how to handle themselves in the desert. And he's kind of thought, we'll dump them, they'll die, I won't have to deal with them anymore. But it turns out, as it always does, you always need the corpse.
Yes.
Remember that, Holden.
And remember that, listeners at home, especially our younger listeners that may not have had
always
the thirst of kill just
need
yet.
The corpse.
You gotta have the corpse.
And I've said this in the last podcast and left, and that's the truth, is that if you don't have a corpse, you don't have a crime.
Yeah, and I said this to my mom just the other day. My God, I just want to fucking jerk off hunched over a giant bloated dead corpse.
And this is what brings us to the end of the first episode of Dunecast, because that's what this is really all about.
Right.
Not jerking off on corpses.
Yeah, yeah.
But the energy behind it.
Yes.
And how you really have to think about the consequences of your actions. And you also have to think about, you know, I think big questions we're going to like lay on you are, do you really want to know the future? Do you?
If you had the chance to play God, should you and would you?
I would.
You would?
I feel the opposite.
Reading God Emperor the whole time, I was just, I mean, not to jump ahead too much, but I was just like, I don't even know if I like this fucking guy, and I don't, would
you won't
never
even get to know him.
The person.
You won't even fucking get to know him. You're just so, like, disgusted by his form that you won't get to know the man inside. There's a man in the worm, bro.
You see the man in the worm. That's what makes it worse. I'd rather just be a fucking worm.
All they care about is if I have a penis.
The loneliest worm
in the world. He's the loneliest worm in the world. But yes, you know what? That's how I wooed my wife, Natalie. That was like one of the things I used to talk to her about. This is really true. So when we were first dating,
a worm guy. Are you going to say talk about Dune? Because she seems exasperated every time you talk about Dune around her. But go on.
She has been worn down by love. But I used to tell her, which is a bit that I used to do about how, I'd love to be dictator because I'd be a dictator who listens.
Ah.
And I think that's what's important. What I don't also understand about Harkonnen is that he comes from this like world of shit, which you'll find also about like Yeti Prime where he's from, is this like black rock filled with just like essentially like orcs like working and just like filled with just fucking pollution and corruption and all this kind of bullshit.
Looks like man flesh is back on the menu.
It is all of that shit. But it's like, if you're a dictator, like if I was a dictator, I'd like also put in fun shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I would put in like all sorts of like
merry-go-round
and holodecks and like and
silent
wars
where everybody's wearing the headphones.
All of that shit. Ice cream for free every Tuesday if you don't get a culture ticket. Because culture tickets will be big. Yeah. That's just more about making sure you fit in with the environment.
It into a first grade classroom is what we're doing.
But you get ice cream and holodecks and all that kind of shit. Why are you complaining?
That one thin slice of pizza from the pizza party.
But you get a piece of pizza and you didn't have to pay for it. That's what you pay your taxes for, because there's a lot of taxes in my world.
Right.
But that's they does open up on one chapter when they are wondering what the hell. Basically, when they're wondering where the hell Jessica and Paul is, they like cut to Giedi Prime and they fade. Routha is just their way to like have fun is that his nephew, who's played by Sting in the movie, who's just like, you know, it's like ruthless, cunning, like fuck. Like he basically just slits the throat of 100 slaves and they're all like, yay, because they're like forced to like it with fear. But that's, you know, that's where I want our audience to be.
100%.
I want you to be afraid to not like this show.
Right, absolutely. And I agree with that. I think when fear is the basis of anything,
it's great.
Shit seems to work out really
People
well.
People love it. Thank you so much for joining us on our first journey into the sands of Dune. Next week, we will take up more of the plot of Dune. But I will say, episodes after 4... are not going to be about plot. We're going to be talking more about themes and bullshit.
Yeah, and a lot of this, you know, and if you're thinking like, oh, they're just giving away all the plot points. Why?
You wouldn't understand anything if we didn't.
It's like, A, you wouldn't understand anything if you didn't. B, it's little, like, this is all just setting up pieces to put into motion so that we can talk about philosophical concepts, so that we can talk about political structures and
trying to wrap my fucking brain around the concept. I was reading this like article about, they said the fractal nature of Dune and this idea that he wrote it as fractals. You know what those are?
Yes, like reoccurring shape, mathematic shapes and
patterns, smaller patterns, like micro patterns also exist on a macro level.
Yeah. I see that. Because
it'll be difficult to understand.
He also, not to bring it back to dreams too much, but again, I think that he purposely has, especially as the books go on, I don't think it's like bad writing or laziness either. He's constantly cycling back to these concepts.
It's on purpose.
And adding more to them. And again, I think that big one is that past sense concept of being able to have all of your ancestors' memories inside one person and how that makes you transcend being one human being. And
or
how even as a child, you're also like an old woman and you're also this, that, and the other at the same time.
But
and
what
that's,
happens
yeah,
when
that's
you're
a
so
repeating
focused,
thing.
But what happens when you're so focused on listening to the quote-unquote memories of the past and also visions of the future that you don't take the time to live in the present?
Abomination!
I'm taking the knife! But thank you so much. We will be back next week with more Dunecast.
All right, let's close it out with the proper way.
I must not fear.
Fear is the mind killer.
Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration.
I will face my fear.
I will permit it to pass over me and through me. And when it has gone past, I will turn the inner eye to see its path. Where the fear has gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain. And now a scene from Dune Theater. The scene opens with Jessica, having just left her son Paul, in the hands of the Reverend Mother, Gaius Helen Mohian.
Paul, put your right hand in the box.
From the folds of her gown, she lifted a green metal cube. She turned it, and Paul saw that one side was open, black, and oddly terrifying. What are you going to do to me, Reverend Mother?
I hold at your neck the Gom Jabbar, the high-handed enemy. It's a needle with a drop of poison on its tip.
Oh!
Don't pull away! You'll feel that poison.
How did you trick my mother into leaving me alone with you?
Here's the rest of it. If you withdraw your hand from the box, you die. This is the only rule. Keep your hand in the box and live. Withdraw it and die.
What is in it?
Pain.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, just need to do a little vacuum in here, you know. Friendly neighborhood janitor, don't mind me.
Paul, this is to determine if you're human. Be silent.
Pain throbbed up his arm. Sweat stood out on his forehead. Every fiber cried out to withdraw his hand from that burning pit. But the Gomja...
Can someone tell me where the toilet is around here? Is it the one of these round doors? The ones that lift?
Excuse me?
Someone called a janitor, said there's a leak of that brown water. Something about not wasting it, as is the custom. I don't get into all that voodoo, right? Say, is this some kind of pain ceremony happening here? Is that what's going on a Sunday?
Leave us, you fool!
What's in the box? What's in the box?
Pain. Quite a bit of it. Stop distracting me. Fear's the mind killer.
Yeah, I know a thing or two about pain. I'll tell you what. My wife Linda left me for the dog trainer. The dog left me for fucking Linda.
It's actually much more painful to listen to this janitor talk about his personal life than leaving my hand in this box. If I had to choose between the two, I'd definitely choose the magical pain box any day.
Am I being nagged here? Is that what's happening? I read all the books. I know how the game works. That's how I got Linda. I did a magic trick for her at a nightclub. Now I'm here. Look, I can tell you guys want me to go. I can tell your eyes are screaming, get out of this room, janitor.
So much pain.
I'll do just that. You know how many toilets are in Caladan? I'll give you a hint.
Oh, fuck you.
It's a lot.
So let me let you go. I'll get out of here. But I'll tell you, if anyone's a human, it's Paul over here. I know I'm going to see him.
Pain. Pure pain. Nothing. Please. Please let me take my hand out of the box.
Enough. Cool Wahad. No woman child ever withstood that much. And the whole janitor thing happened as well. An unexpected barrier.
Still here, actually.
Get out of here!
All right, won't be the last time you see me as a reoccurring character, though. I'll have you know, I'll be in the background. I'll be signaling stuff.
Take your hand from the box, young human, and look at it.
Paul jerked his hand from the box and stared at it, astonished. Not a mark. No sign of agony on the flesh.
A human can override any nerve in the body. We Bene Gesserit sift people to find the humans.
Wow, that's deep. You guys want to hit this? I got a sativa and an indica.
The Reverend Mother uses the voice.
A couple of hybrids.
You will live!
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.